think is never really over, parenthood. It seems like once you become a parent, you always remain a parent. VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, after two deadly crashes and nearly 2 years of investigation, the Federal Aviation Administration has cleared Boeing's 737 MAX jet for flight. The U.S. Air Safety Agency announced the move early Wednesday. It said the decision comes after a complete and methodical 20-month review process. Air safety agencies around the world grounded the 737 MAX in March 2019, following the crash of an Ethiopian Airlines flight. That happened less than 5 months after another MAX, flown by Indonesia's Lion Air, crashed in the Java Sea. A total of 346 people on both planes were killed. On Wednesday, FAA Chief Stephen Dixon signed an order to cancel the grounding, the longest in commercial aviation history. U.S. airlines are permitted to fly the MAX after the Boeing company changes computers and computer software on each plane. In addition, the company will offer training to pilots on how to fly the aircraft. The FAA said its decision on the 737 MAX was made in cooperation with air safety agencies worldwide. Agencies in Europe, Brazil, Canada, and China are likely to announce their own approvals separately after independent investigations. The U.S. move follows congressional hearings on the crashes. The hearings led to criticism of FAA officials for weak oversight and having close ties to Boeing. The company was criticized for being in a hurry to set up a software system that put profits over safety. In time, the investigation led to the dismissal of Boeing's chief executive officer. Investigators studied anti-stall software that Boeing had developed to keep the 737 MAX balanced when flying. That software pushed the nose of the aircraft down repeatedly on both of the planes that crashed. In each case, a single sensor caused the problem. The FAA required Boeing to change the software program so it does not repeatedly point the nose of the plane down. Boeing says the new software does not override or ignore the pilot's controls like it did in the past. The company also must add new display systems for pilots and change wiring inside the plane. The decision on the 737 MAX comes in the middle of a health crisis that has frightened away passengers and hurt the aviation industry. Air travel in the United States alone is down about 65% from a year ago. Boeing sales of new planes have dropped because of the 737 MAX crisis and the COVID-19 pandemic. Nearly 400 MAX jets were in service worldwide when they were grounded. Boeing has built and stored about 450 more since then. Reuters news agency estimates the company has lost about $20 billion in expected sales. Massachusetts Institute of Technology professor John Hansman teaches classes on the science of flight. He noted that people generally avoid airplanes for a few months after there are problems. The Max case is unusual, but Hansman said he would feel safe flying on a Max. The whole thing has had more scrutiny than any airplane in the world, he said. It's probably the safest airplane to be on.
Drug makers Pfizer and BioNTech said they are within days of seeking emergency use authorization for their COVID-19 vaccine from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Pfizer, an American company, and its German partner, BioNTech, said final results from the large Phase 3 study show the vaccine to be 95% effective against COVID-19. The drug makers said there were 170 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the study of 43,000 volunteers. Among the confirmed cases, 8 received the experimental vaccine and 162 received a placebo, a shot with an inactive substance. The FDA only requires that a vaccine be at least 50% effective to be considered for emergency use. The agency also wants the drug makers to present 2 months of safety data from the trials, which Pfizer said it had done. Pfizer and BioNTech added that there were no serious safety concerns. They reported that the shot was also more than 94% effective in adults over the age of 65, a high-risk group. Andrew Hill is a researcher at the University of Liverpool's Department of Pharmacology. He told Reuters the 94% protection for older people is key. This is the evidence we needed to ensure that the most vulnerable people are protected. Moderna, another American drug maker, reported this week that early results showed its experimental vaccine to be 94.5% effective against COVID-19. Neither company has published the results in scientific papers, but they are ready to share the information with the FDA and other regulatory agencies around the world. Both vaccine candidates use a new technology known as messenger RNA, or mRNA. To make an mRNA vaccine, scientists create a genetic material that directs the human body to produce antibodies that can recognize and destroy the new coronavirus. The new technology lets drug makers develop and manufacture new treatments faster than traditional vaccines. Dr. Uğur Şahin is the chief executive co-founder of BioNTech. He said, "These achievements highlight the potential of mRNA as a new drug class." He added, we will continue to work with our partners and governments around the world to prepare for global distribution in 2020 and beyond. The two drug makers said they could have as many as 70 million shots ready by the end of this year with the FDA's emergency approval. Both vaccines require two shots. That means 35 million people could receive them by the end of 2020. Health officials expect the first treatments to be given to healthcare workers and other high-risk groups. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Twitter has launched a new feature that lets users post tweets that disappear after a day. The social media company calls the new tweets fleets. The word fleet is an adjective meaning very fast or quick. Fleets can be sent as written messages, pictures, or videos. Twitter says it decided to add the feature after some users expressed concerns about the current tweeting system. Some of you tell us that tweeting is uncomfortable because it feels so public, so permanent, the company said Tuesday in an announcement on its website. Some users also feel a lot of pressure to receive large numbers of likes and retweets, it added. Fleets cannot be retweeted and will not have likes. The only way a person can answer or comment on a fleet is by sending the user a direct message. This prevents any back-and-forth communication between users from becoming a public discussion. To help people feel more comfortable, we've been working on a lower-pressure way for people to talk about what's happening, Twitter said. Fleets were launched so everyone can easily join the conversation in a new way, with their fleeting thoughts. The new Twitter feature comes long after other social media services, including Snapchat, Facebook, and Instagram, added the ability for users to send disappearing messages. Such messages have become increasingly popular with social media users looking for smaller groups or more private messaging. The company had been testing the feature in Brazil, Italy, India, and South Korea before launching it worldwide. Those new to Twitter found fleets to be an easier way to share what's on their mind, the Twitter statement said. Because they disappear from view after a day, fleets helped people feel more comfortable sharing personal and casual thoughts, opinions, and feelings. However, some Twitter users who experimented with the feature said they were worried that the tool may create new possibilities for online abuse. For example, they said fleets could permit the sending of unwanted direct messages. The feature also permits fleet writers to tag people who have blocked them. A Twitter official told Reuters news agency it was listening to suggestions from users and would work to fix safety concerns like the blocking issue. Twitter and other social media companies are under pressure to do a better job of preventing abuses and limiting the spread of misinformation on their websites. Another new Twitter feature set to launch to all users next year is the voice tweet, an audio recording that takes the place of a written message. The company's product designer, Maya Gold Patterson, said many users feel Twitter's 280-character message model is too limiting. And sometimes tweeting isn't the right way of communicating at the moment, Patterson said. So we were interested in exploring how audio could help add an additional layer to the public conversation. The feature has been tested in recent months. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In November of 1863, President Abraham Lincoln traveled to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. He went there to make a speech at a ceremony establishing a military burial ground. 5 months earlier, Confederate General Robert E. Lee had marched his army up from Virginia to invade the North. The Union Army of the Potomac went after him. They met at Gettysburg in the bloodiest battle of the Civil War. Kay Gallant and Frank Oliver tell the story of Abraham Lincoln's speech, the Gettysburg Address.
The Battle of Gettysburg lasted 3 days. General Lee threw his men against the Union Army. The Northern soldiers refused to break. Lee, at last, had to stop fighting. Badly hurt, his army went back to Virginia. Lee left behind a battlefield covered with Confederate dead. More than 3,000 Confederate soldiers had been killed. Union losses were almost as heavy. 2,500 Union soldiers had been killed. The terrible job of clearing the battlefield fell to the Union soldiers who had won the battle. Many thousands on both sides had been wounded. The wounded were moved to medical centers for treatment. The dead were buried. Most of the bodies were buried where they fell. The Confederate dead generally were buried together in large, shallow graves. Union troops who fell were buried in separate graves all over the battlefield.
A few weeks after the battle, the governor of Pennsylvania visited Gettysburg. As he walked over the battlefield, he saw where rains had washed away the earth, covering many of the fallen soldiers. He said men who died so bravely should have a better resting place than that. The governor said a new cemetery should be built for the bodies of the Union soldiers. He asked the governors of other northern states to help raise money for the cemetery. Within a month, there was money enough to buy a large area of the battlefield for a military cemetery. Work began almost immediately. The human remains were moved from other places on the battlefield and put into graves in the new cemetery.
The governor planned a ceremony in November 1863 to dedicate the Gettysburg Cemetery. He invited governors and congressmen from each state in the Union. he asked a former senator and governor of Massachusetts, Edward Everett, to give the dedication speech. An invitation was sent to the White House, too. The governor asked President Lincoln to come to the ceremony. He asked Lincoln to say a few words. Lincoln agreed to do so. He felt it was his duty to go. He wanted to honor the brave men who had died at Gettysburg. Lincoln hoped his words might ease the sorrow over the loss of these men and lift the spirit of the nation.
Lincoln was advised to talk about democracy. He recently had received a letter from a man in Massachusetts. The man had just returned from a visit to Europe. The man told Lincoln that Europeans saw the war more clearly than Americans, who were in the middle of it. He said they saw it as a war between the people and an aristocracy. The South, he said, was ruled by a small group of aristocrats. He said once the people understood that it was a war for democracy, they would win it quickly. The man urged Lincoln to explain to the common people that the war was not the North against the South, but democracy against the enemies of democracy.
Lincoln was busy during the 2 weeks before the ceremony at Gettysburg. He did not have much time to work on his speech. He decided what to say, but he did not choose the exact words he would use. Lincoln left Washington November 18th for the train ride to Gettysburg. The train stopped in Baltimore. A crowd waited to see him. An old man came up and shook Lincoln's hand. He told the president that he had lost a son in the fighting at Gettysburg. Lincoln said he understood the man's sorrow. Lincoln said to the old man, "When I think of the sacrifices of life still to be offered, and the hearts and homes to be made lonely before this terrible war is over, my heart is like lead. I feel at times like hiding in a deep darkness."
Lincoln arrived at Gettysburg at sundown. He had dinner. Then he went to his room to complete the speech he would give the next day. He worked for several hours. Finally, it was done. The next morning, Lincoln, on horseback, led a slow parade to the new cemetery. A huge crowd waited before the place where Lincoln and the other important visitors would sit. Military bands played. Soldiers saluted.
The ceremonies began with a prayer. Then Edward Everett rose to speak. Everett stood silent for a moment. He looked out across the battlefield and the crowds that now covered it. He began to talk about the Civil War and what had caused it. He spoke about Lee's invasion of the North. He told how Northern cities would have fallen had Lee not been stopped at Gettysburg. He praised the men who had given their lives in the great battle. Everett spoke for almost 2 hours. He closed his speech with the hope that the nation would come out of the war with greater unity than ever before. Then Lincoln stood up. He looked out over the valley, then down at the papers in his hand. He began to read.
Four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work for which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
The crowd applauded for several minutes. Then the people began to leave. Lincoln turned to a friend. He said he feared his speech had been a failure. He said he should have prepared it more carefully. Edward Everett did not agree with Lincoln. He said the president's speech was perfect. He said the president had said more in 2 minutes than he, Everett, had said in 2 hours. Newspapers and other publications praised Lincoln's Gettysburg address. Said one, "The few words of the president were from the heart, to the heart. They cannot be read without emotion." Abraham Lincoln went back to Washington that night. He was very tired. Within a week, his secretary announced that the president was sick. He was suffering from smallpox.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.